And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 706. We're continuing our early NFBC Draft Champions ADP debates, heading to the first base position tonight at catchers last week. We'll do kind of a position, a show here and there as we keep ramping up for the fantasy baseball season in 2025. We'll talk some recent news, including the very recent Cody Bellinger trade. And it helps that I got a Yankees guy in tow, as usual. They're having a heck of an offseason for a team that cried about losing Juan Soto. That's all I'm going to say. First off, though, you can find me on Twitter at BDendrick. And this guest, our co-host, that I've had the pleasure of joining me for quite a while now. He's going to help break things down throughout the offseason and more. You can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tid, how we doing, my friend?
Doing pretty good, Bubba, especially after the trade that you alluded to. I definitely am happy as a Yankee fan, first and foremost. I think it's a bigger trade for them in real life than it is for fantasy, but I think it definitely gives Bellinger a boost in fantasy, and I know he's on our sheet tonight of players to talk about even before the trade went down, so we'll get into it. But yeah, it's definitely been a good offseason for the Yankees. I'm trying to fight off the Met fans that I know about how they're doing fine even though they missed out on Soto, but long way to go, so still a lot of signings to be made.
Still got to play the games. That's the fun part. Got to stay healthy, all that good stuff. But all things considered, instead of doing $50 to $60 million a year on Juan Soto, which it's no slight on Soto, he's awesome, like worth probably all the pennies, but to turn that into getting your Devin Williams, your Max Fried, now Cody Bellinger. I posted in the Discord. I saw Carlos Baerga, who's actually been a very reputable source for Latin players lately. He's saying that Anthony Santander and the Yankees are extremely close on a deal right now. You guys aren't done. It's got to be nice in the Bronx, thinking you guys got so close last year. Everyone thought the world was ending when Juan Soto leaves town. Nah, not so fast. We're going to be better probably next year. We're going to take all the resources and put it over here now. So that's pretty fun. Must be nice to be you. all right, let's get into some of these moves. First, we'll talk about the Cubs, one of the positives they moved before the Bellinger move. Like a couple days after our last show, maybe a day after our last show, Kyle Tucker gets traded from the Astros to the Chicago Cubs for Isak Paredes, Hayden Wesneski, and prospect Cam Smith, their first-round pick in 2024. Let's start on the Kyle Tucker side of things here. I think we all know he's a beast. I don't see it being that much of a dramatic issue. Still a first-round pick for me. Any thoughts on Kyle Tucker joining the Cubbies?
We kind of alluded to this last week when we talked about Yainer Diaz, but the Astros lineup is definitely bad now, but it was looking a little shaky in the back half of it before this trade was made. And the Cubs, I mean, well, before they traded Bellinger, their lineup, like their outfield, was loaded. It's still pretty good with PCA there, but I'm not gonna say it's a team upgrade, but it's definitely not a downgrade, because the Cubs lineup is pretty strong on the top. Mm-hmm. And I agree with what you said. He's a great player, Tucker. I was looking at his Statcast today just out of curiosity to see how — I'm always curious with the moves, how the homers would change from ballpark to ballpark. But the one thing that really caught my eye with Tucker was the sprint speed was only 18th percentile. And it's been low for a few years, but he's still been able to steal 25 plus bases the last 2 years. So I'm not too worried about it. I don't know. Maybe some of that sprint speed was dropped after he broke his leg. And I don't know if he played on it, but if he did, I'm sure that didn't help the sprint speed for the year. But it's something to keep in mind. Maybe the steals fall off. I know the Cubs were kind of they held Nico back last year, so maybe you can't really hope for high 20s with Tucker. Maybe he's more of a 20 steal guy. But to your point, and I agree, still first rounder, and haven't gotten to outfield yet, but I'm sure I'll have him highly ranked once I get there.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I remember a discussion point last year, the Cubs weren't running in the first half. They picked it up in the second half, because Horner still had a lot of steals in the second half. We saw Swanson running a lot. Hap got his. So eventually they ran. But yeah, as a team that is loaded as they are, a Craig Counsell who ran in Milwaukee, took a little while to get things moving in Chicago. So we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, he's still a 30 home run bat with, to me, 25 to 30 steal upside. Good average. He's going to hit the middle of the order. Like he said, it's a good batting order. So no problems for me. You mentioned PCA, Hap, Seiya still there. Now Bellinger's out of the way, but there's still some moving parts there. Kaseya was rumored to get traded. He wants to play defense. He does not want to DH. So maybe the Cubs still flip him even after the trade. We'll have to keep an eye on that. But something else to keep in mind. And you mentioned the Astros side of things. So now Isak Paredes is going to slide into either third or first. He can play both. Right now, third base, because Bregman's not there. And they say they're still interested in him, but it feels like if they're trading Tucker and they got Paredes, they really don't need to give Bregman a big deal. That doesn't seem like a thing to do. They'd be better off going and get like a Christian Walker or something to play first base or attacking the outfield. And it's like Santander would have been pretty fun in Houston, just throwing it out there, stuff like that. So what's your thoughts first on Paredes coming over here? Because I know the first thing everybody said, and not wrong, Crawford boxes are going to be very nice for him.
Exactly. And he went from someone who I wanted nothing to do with, especially in Chicago, but now I have him ranked pretty decently well in my third base rankings, Paredes. And yeah, it's just this park's made for him, probably more so than any other park in the majors. And right now, Roster Resource has him batting second in between Altuve and Yordan Alvarez, which is a pretty good spot. So even as bad as Paredes' Statcast looks, like the barrel rate, the XBA, the X slug, the average exit velocity, they're all pretty horrible. I mean, he's never really lit up Statcast anyway, so I think he could still succeed with the poor underlying metrics just because of where he is and the lineup. So definitely someone I'll be interested in drafting. I'm not going to target him necessarily, but I'll be fine taking him, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you on the fact I am much more interested in Paredes, who over the last month since November 15th, there's been 14 completed draft champions. ADP's 17, or no, that's not Paredes, that is Parker Meadows. Paredes' ADP is 271. He's gone as high as 241. I'd imagine that keeps coming up. I'm with you on that one. People are going to keep getting excited about that, and honestly, not for wrong reasons, because third base gets pretty rough, and that's a nice upgrade there for Paredes. Hayden Wesneski is an interesting one. This is a guy we've seen flashes of being really, really good. We've seen flashes of control issues slash injuries kind of hinder potential, I guess, with Wesneski. He's a Houston guy, and so he's excited about that. And the Astros came out and said he's going to be in the starting rotation. Roster Resource has Luis Garcia in there instead, at least they did as of like 2 days ago. The Astros said they want Wesneski to start. So what's that do for you? Because if we talk about the past month's ADP, it's 695 as high as 502.
It's a pretty good price in a DC, that's for sure. I was curious to see what Roster Resource had. So before you mentioned, I brought it up and I was a little disappointed to see that they didn't project him into the rotation or even the bullpen. But I trust what you've looked up to be relatively accurate. I mean, of course, clubs always lie. You can never trust them.
That's the kicker. Yep.
But even in so he started off rough in 2023. Wesneski, I think that's the year he was kind of a big spring training draft pick. He pitched better last year, at least underneath. Well, even the ERA was like almost a run lower, 3.86 in 67 innings. Yeah, I mean, look at what the Astros did with Kikuchi. So once I saw Wesneski went to the Astros, I definitely got interested in potentially drafting him once I start. But have to wait and see if Roster Resource reacts to what you saw. And I'm sure they will, but it's always tricky with it when it's this early in the season too.
I was like, it's early in the season. Maybe like they want him to start, but it'll come down to a spring training battle of some sort. It's just because Luis Garcia was so banged up last year at times. I was kind of like, is he really going to be back type situation? He threw 27 total innings in 2023. Didn't even pitch in 2024. He's coming back from Tommy John. Like, Wesneski's healthy. That's kind of where I lean in this one, but we'll wait and see. Maybe they're just taking a holiday here at Roster Resource trying to fine tune things, but that's what the general manager powers to be said. So like you said, we'll wait and see, but that's where I'm leaning for now. We're not going to talk Cam Smith. Really good prospect. It looks like on paper, super young. I said first round pick by the Cubs in 2024. So he played, I think I wrote it on the Discord or on the Patreon, like 40 something games between rookie ball and double A last year. Like, I think he played like five games at double A before the season was over. So he's got some time before he has an impact. Don't get too excited for 2025. All right, let's head to your guys. Got a couple moves coming up here. We'll stick to the Cubs trend here. Well, Cody Bellinger time. Head to the Bronx. Cody Poteet, the 30-year-old prospect, Cody Poteet, who's been in the minor league since 2015. Cody Poteet. I had to look all this up because I was just baffled by this earlier today. And $5 million to help offset a few fees went to the Yankees. So, Bellinger, Bronx, besides the fact he has a relationship with Giancarlo Stanton now, what's your thoughts? What's your thoughts on this one?
Oh, I hope him and Stan can make up if they have to.
Been some fun memes out there already. Don't you worry. It's the Eskimo Brothers meme is amazing. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, I mentioned the Met fans that I know, and one of them already sent a tweet about them before you even mentioned. So I had a feeling, I was aware of it briefly, but I didn't know like how serious it was. So it'll be interesting. Maybe a little bit, another Bronx Zoo this summer. Hopefully not, though. So like I said at the start of the show, as a Yankee fan, I love it. You mentioned Santander is now rumored to be going there. And that's the thing with Cody. So he could play first or center. Two holes they had with Soto gone and Rizzo probably retiring. I don't know if anyone's going to try to sign him. So I gave him great flexibility to sign whoever made whatever deal they liked the best, the Yankees. And right now he's slated to bat fourth between Judge and Stanton.
It's pretty good.
It's a pretty good spot. I tweeted and posted on Blue Sky about Stanton the other day about how good his underlying numbers were compared to the other top DHs, or I guess util only players in fantasy coming up this year. And it's a healthy Stanton, and they even have Wells behind him. Dominguez behind Wells, so Bellinger should have plenty of protection, plenty of chances for RBIs. I don't want to get too in depth with him because we're going to cover him later on with one of the debates, but there is a boost. He would have had a boost playing Yankee Stadium in his homer total last year. So, it's not a one for one, but it's the power should definitely play up a little bit now that he's there. And yeah, it's going to be great too. Like from an in-game standpoint, if he starts at first base and they want to do something defensively, he can go out to center field, or if he starts at center, they can bring someone else in to maybe take Judge out. There's a lot of options now going forward, not just with the signings, like I said, but with how the game's managed too. So I'm a big fan, even though he's not the Cody Bellinger of old. I know that, but he's a solid player, and they gave up nothing really to get him. They basically signed him at a cheap deal compared to other free agents. So I'm all for it.
And something you just mentioned there, that's one thing I've noticed a lot, which makes sense, is we saw early on, we saw some big free agent numbers out there, and then a bunch of teams are trading now. And I think it's because you look back, you're like, okay, I can go get these elite talents for like half of what they go for on the open market right now. Let's dance. Like, let's go do that right now. We can rebuild the farm later, and we can have actually money to go spend on other parts. Like, it makes a ton of sense in reality. If you're looking at it from the baseball side of things, not the fantasy side of it. So I think that's a reason, like, a lot of names we're kind of surprised about are like, okay, let's go do it now. Let's see what we can do. Even the Astros, like, as much as I love Kyle Tucker, he would have been great there. If they are like realistically thinking, okay, no Bregman, we got to start thinking for like 27, 28, something like that. Well, yeah, go get a Paredes who's under control for a few more years. Go get a Wesneski who's under control for a while that maybe you can tap into. Go get this Cam Smith, like top prospect. That all makes sense in the grand scheme. Like, it sucks as a fan right now, but I think you're see a lot of teams starting to kind of, this is how you rebuild. Instead of rebuilding through the draft, you rebuild this way. Get a couple players that are ready now with control. Like when I pulled the Astros starting rotation up, I think three out of the five of you include Garcia. I don't even know what Wisniewski's is. Three out of the five that they are penciled in now have three more years of control. Like that lets you build things. So that's kind of the perk to the situation. You got to kind of take a step back and realize this is maybe the way it's going to go now, instead of spending $60 million on a player type thing. So just wanted to put those 2 cents in real quick. All right, more Yankees news. They went and acquired Devin Williams from the Milwaukee Brewers. We'll talk about the return here in a second. Let's stick with the Yankees here, Ben, because obviously Williams is one of the top five closers in baseball. Some might say like top three. Depends on how you want to break it down. I'm not going to argue that. I'm bummed because I was enjoying the quote-unquote value on Luke Weaver. I thought he was good enough to close. Obviously, that's not happening now. What's your thoughts on Williams in the Bronx?
I was definitely surprised when I heard about the trade.
We'll see.
Yeah,
he thought he was going to LA.
Yeah. He's probably he's going to miss his beard, hopefully. I don't know. I don't see them ever changing that rule, unfortunately, but it's a different story. So, like you mentioned, I think like top five, top three closer, however you want to put it for Williams. And unfortunately, like he came back, he was injured last year. I forget what the injury was. I know he started the season on the IL, but he came back as strong as ever.
It was a back injury. Like a crack of bone, I got this vertebrae or something in his back. It was bad.
Well, if it's a bone, at least it hopefully healed and won't be an issue now. So it's not like it's a shoulder or elbow thing. And just as dominant as ever, 1.25 ERA, even though it was only 20 innings, but still, like the XFIP, XERA were all awesome. And had I been drafting, I probably would have been in on Luke Weaver as my RP2 potentially because of how good he was. And I like going in that early RP2 range for my RP2. But in terms of also like a real baseball perspective, I mean, he can bridge the gap now from the sixth inning right to Devin Williams in a tight game. He went multiple innings plenty of times. He has the closer background, Weaver. So it's another great baseball move. And I was worried like they were focusing too much on the pitching, the Yankees. But now after the Bellinger trade and now there's the talk about Santander, I'm feeling pretty good that they're going to fix the lineup where they have the issues. But, yeah, I mean, I haven't gotten to RPs yet for my rankings, but I'm sure Williams will. I'll probably give him a little homer boost, though, once I take care of those.
You can only boost him so far, so no one's going to call you out on it, at least. That's all I'll say. on the flip side for Weaver, like, I was definitely taking him as an RP2. In DCs, he's still going to have tons of value if he's healthy. Like, he's one of those pitchers that he's going to get you some wins. He's going to get you some saves. He's like a Griffin Jacks now to me, which has plenty of value in a DC. I think I've had Griffin Jacks ever since I started playing in an NFBC like 3 or 4 years ago. I always loved that type of guy late in drafts over some, like, random pray to God like Miles Mikolas or something. I'll take my chance on one of these relievers. So I was just looking at Weaver, like, since the 15th of November, 14 drafts, ADP is 170, as high as 105. Obviously that's changed. Flip side, he's gone as low as 672. Like, I'll snack that up all day long. He wouldn't get past 672 in one of my drafts, I'll say that. So he probably wouldn't get past like 500 in one of my drafts. That 672 seems like a massive outlier.
He's a premier handcuff now.
Yeah.
We just mentioned that what Williams was hurt last year, start the year. I mean, yep, the back flares exactly up now. So they're going back to Weaver. So if I end up taking Williams in my DCs when I start drafting, I would definitely look to add Weaver as my RP3 or 4 at some point.
Yep. That's why I wanted to bring that up. I saw that 672. I'm like, that will never come close to 672 in a draft I'm a part of. Now we'll flip it back to Milwaukee before we talk about the players that came over. Obviously, with Devin Williams leaving town, Trevor Megill, who I was taking a lot of early because I figured eventually Williams would get traded. I was kind of hoping for like February or something. Like, I'm being greedy. I understand that. But he goes, so Trevor Megill's the dude now. ADP of 300. He's gone as high as 215. That is still going up. I've heard rumors in our Discord, the Love on the Bloom Patreon Discord, of like, I don't know if fifth round was right, but some crazy high picks, let's put it that way. He's going off the board early because closers go early in the DC formats. What's your thoughts on Trevor Megill, who was lights out, outstanding when he was pitching before Williams came back?
Yeah, he had definitely had a good year. He was very reliable for the Brewers and whoever was smart enough to pick him up when the Devin Williams news came, broke when it came down. I mean, he's, from a skill standpoint, Megill isn't the most dominant closer. He only had a 9.71 K per nine, and that's a 27.3% K percentage. So in K percentage terms, it's pretty good, 27.3. His K minus walk was 19.7, so a little bit below 20. But, I mean, for a reliever, that's fine. I mean, I agree with you. Like, I don't know what the landscape looks like for closers as a whole right now because I haven't dug into it yet, but I'm sure he'll be someone that I'll be targeting. And let's see the swinging strike rate. It looks like it was 13.9, so above average. Yeah, he's a solid closer, and he showed last year, Megill, that he can be the guy. So, good for you for taking him in those early DCs.
I'll never get those prices again.
Nope. So hopefully you have him in a spot where you have Clay Holmes or not Luke Weaver, but
I'll have to double check that for sure. But
yeah, getting that match is tricky sometimes.
Oh, 100%. All that foreshadowing. And just for fun, because the Brewers are known to trade, or if you want handcuffs, Joel Piamps, Abner Uribe are popular names going up there. But even a Jared Koning went late in one of the drafts, according to our Discord, which is interesting. But Piamps, he's almost undrafted these days. I've seen him in the late rounds a lot. That'll change, obviously, and same with Abner Uribe. So if you're in those deep, deep weeds, those are some more names to think about. All right, Brewers side of things here. And this, again, like I kind of say with the Astros, this makes too much sense for the Brewers. This is why they make this trade. Year in and year out, Ben, in the preseason, you, me, anybody that looks at the Brewers rotation usually laughs because someone's hurt or it's bad. Like Woodruff right now is in the rotation. Who knows what his shoulder looks like? You have Devin, you have Freddie Peralta, and who else is what it comes down to. So they go and trade for Nestor Cortez. Well, and that to me is a gigantic upgrade on most of the pitchers in their rotation. Before he got hurt, and then we know the shot heard around the world in the World Series, Nestor was great. He has sub-4 ERA. He's had a sub-4 ERA 3 of the last 4 years. He's been very serviceable. So what's your thoughts on Nestor going to Milwaukee? And we're looking at an ADP of 318 as high as 264, which I think is outstanding.
Yeah, it's definitely a good price for Nestor. He's been pretty reliable last few years. He did end on a pretty poor note with the Yankees, but I don't think that's really why they traded him. Honestly, though, I would have preferred them to see them trade Stroman first, but any smart team's not going to bite on that. Stroman's
especially with that contract.
Yeah, he's it's not very appealing. So Nestor at least has some appeal still. He's under, I think he hasn't gone to free agency yet. And yeah, looking at the rotation now for the Brewers, it goes if so. It's Freddie, like you said. Then Woodruff, if he can come back and be relatively close to what he was, that's a big if because of the I don't know if he had thoracic outlet, but something with his shoulder. And then they have Nestor as the five. He's probably more like their three, honestly.
100%.
And then Savale, Ryan's boy, he's hit or miss. And then Tobias Myers, he had a 3-year ERA last year, and I think it was a little overachieving, but he's a solid pitcher. It's just with Nestor, I think he's kind of fly ball heavy. If I'm not mistaken, I'm gonna look it up real quick.
And in October, he is.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, if you groove a 90-mile-per-hour fastball in the middle of Freddie Freeman, the base is loaded. It's not going to end well. Yeah, so Nestor is definitely a flyball-heavy pitcher, which, as anyone watching the World Series would know. And I think Milwaukee's a homer-friendly park, so it could be an issue there. But Nestor doesn't really walk anybody. If he does, it's like one a game. Definitely a controlled pitcher. It has to be with the stuff. It's not the most dominant stuff, but yeah, at that price, especially in a DC, I think it's definitely a very good target.
Yeah, he's going to be a great DC target. And honestly, in redraft, he'll be a great, a really nice later round pick that if he fails, he can drop him. But if he's even close to where he's been recently, like that's a very serviceable back end rotation guy. Like, I always loved Nasty Nestor, been a fan of his. I'm curious what his facial hair will do in Milwaukee now. Could he really let it loose? That could be fun. I do respect that he finds out he gets traded on his birthday party weekend in Vegas, woke up in the quote-unquote morning, who knows when, and that's how he found out that he was traded. So he's in a Vegas fog, and that's a beautiful thing.
I think it was like noon from what I read.
That's outstanding because that means they went hard the night before. Yep. So that's good for him. Good for him. Another play that came along here is Caleb Durbin, the talk of the AFL. He's stolen base king of the AFL. It was funny because one of my news and notes for the Patreon, I wrote how at the winter meetings, Aaron Boone and Cashman both said Durbin's going to get every chance to be the starting second baseman. A few days later, maybe not for the Yankees, apparently. Where I think it's entertaining, I'll keep my thoughts. I want to hear yours first. What's your thoughts on Durbin going to Milwaukee before I try to, you know, maybe steal your thunder on this?
Oh, I mean, I can't say much that hasn't been said already because I feel like I've heard Caleb Durbin mentioned on every podcast I've listened to for like the past week, even before the trade. Someone put it pretty well. I forget who it was, but there's like four Caleb Durbins on the Brewers already.
Yep, there are. That's very true.
Yeah, and I think someone in the Patreon compared him to, I don't know, Frelick or Terang. I said, yeah, he's like, if you look in the mirror, it's Caleb Durbin because he bats right-handed, they bat left-handed. Yep. So it would have been cool to have him on the team because the Yankees don't always have their prospects stay with them through up into the majors. They're a little bit better about it now, but, I mean, look, they traded him away, and I don't know how the power would play up. He only had 10 homers and about half a season in AAA last year, so that's respectable. But it is AAA, and I mean, he doesn't really strike out at all, Durbin. He had more walks than K's last year at AAA. So if in real life, he could definitely be a very valuable player, especially if he can play all over the infield. I just feel like something has to happen with the Brewers, though, because I don't know if Durbin's going to – I don't know. They have all we have right now is Rusty Resource to go off of. I mean, they have him on the bench right now. Terang's going to play. Ortiz is going to play at second and short. Oliver Dunn could probably not – play because they didn't really stick to him too much last year. I think he's the platoon partner with Durbin right now. I could easily see Durbin overtaking Dunn. Dunn's 27. Durbin's only he's gonna be 25. But yeah, I mean, if you need speed in the DC, I get it. He may not start right away, Durbin. So I wouldn't push him up too much. But he has a pretty good chance. I would say nothing's guaranteed. I'll say that.
Yeah, nothing's guaranteed. ADP is 460 as high as 273. So people are thinking he has. What I wrote up on the Patreon is looking at it is, in my mind, and yes, they're all like the Spider-Man meme. This is what it is. But when you throw it around the Brewers, this is how they built their teams for years. You could have Durbin play second. You could have Terang play short. You could have Ortiz play third. or have whatever, but that could be, those three should be in the lineup. Because but what you said is the Oliver Dunn thing, sure, it's a platoon. Oliver Dunn proved to everybody he could not play every day last year with the Brewers. Like, I would rather take Durbin versus right-handed pitching and get on base and run than give Oliver Dunn a chance. That's no offense to Dunn's parents that are probably listening, but I think to me we saw enough. And if you're trading for Durbin and this like skill set he brings, where think about if you had him and like Terang, who both could steal 50 bases just running wild, why would you like platoon the second one? That just, you, in a team that might be lacking as much power as they used to have, like, you roll with this. So we'll see. Like you said, a lot can change, but I'm treating Durbin like he's a regular. That's my two cents. Lot can change, obviously. All right, we got another trade going on here, and let the Oakland A's surprise the world yet again. The A's, after signing Luis Severino, they went and traded for Jeffrey Springs from the Tampa Bay Rays. Big-time arm that's battled injuries, came back a bit last year. A's GM already said they want 150 to 160 innings from Springs, which would make him an outstanding option if that takes place, Ben. ADP of 225, as high as 163. What are your thoughts on Jeffrey Springs with the Athletics?
Yeah, I listened to you read it off as ADP right there, and I think I'd be more in on that in a fab league, because in a DC, I don't trust him to hold up right now. I look at his yearly totals. Springs has only hit 135 innings once. That was in his breakout in 2022. And then he was a reliever for most of his career, and then he broke down. So he's one of the, I guess, wins and losses of the reliever turn starter experiments that we've seen recently. And so people will say, well, he came back last year, but yeah, but then I'm pretty sure he ended the year hurt again, or like he had fatigue or something in his arm, I think. And that's not a good sign, especially, and now he has a team downgrade going from the Rays to the A's. And I mean, everyone thinks the ballpark and, Sacramento's going to play offensively compared to MLB parks, even though it was technically a pitcher's park in the PCL. But I mean, you have to adjust for what we're used to in the majors. And yeah, I think that, well, I'm sure Springs on the Rays would have, well, you read his ADP, but it's probably going to go down now. I think, I think others are going to see the A's and not be as high up on Springs, but so I'll probably avoid him for now. And if he looks good in spring training, then maybe I'll buy it back in during a fab league drafts. But of course, his price will probably rise at the same time. So I'll have to decide then if I want to take the risk. But yeah, if you're doing an OC right now, one of those slow OCs, I could see taking him at that price range, because the replacement value is much higher in those anyway. So I'd just be cautious of the Springs. I just don't trust that he's healthy.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, fab leagues, he's the perfect guy to take. Like, he's a perfect, take your SP3 or 4 shot on him, see where it rolls, and move on from there. There's a ton of risk reward with Jeffrey Springs, so I could see the appeal. Just know it's going to – we'll see. A is going to A's most of the time. But I'm rooting for him. I think it's – I love seeing the A's. I'm trying. Let's put it that way. Like, they're trying, yep, in a big, big way. On the flip side, they sent a bunch of prospects and Joe Boyle over. I've always been a big Joe Boyle fan. I know he can't hit the side of a barn half the time. I'm very – like, he's Ricky Wildthing Vaughn in the flesh. I get it, but he also throws gas and can strike out the world. I got onto him when I was writing the Playing Time Tomorrows for HQ last year, doing the AOS, like looking at prospects. Wow, if this guy gets a shot, heck, he could be fun. He came up and he had moments. He also had moments where, like, wow, this is really, really bad. Tampa Bay has a way of fixing things once in a while. So what's your thoughts on Joe Boyle? Because I've always been optimistic, so obviously I'm intrigued by this situation. ADP of 695, as high as 441. So more people are getting on board as well.
Yeah, I would not take him in the 400s right now. Boyle, I was thinking late, like rounds 45 to 50 as a flyer potentially.
I think I took him as high as like 44th round once, but yes, I'm in the same region you are, yes.
Yeah, but now that he's with the Rays, people are going to think he's the next McClanahan or Glasnow. I think it was Ryan Vanance too. What was that?
I said I wouldn't go that far, folks.
Yeah, right, but I think Ryan's tweet was in response to somebody else, and he was saying how pre-Rays Glasnow's K rate was similar to what Boyle's was, or it was high, and they were able to get it down. But I also think with Glasnow, he had the sticky stuff, but that's a different story, a different topic for another day. Boyle, I mean, yeah, like I said, late in a DC, I would be okay if there's not much else on the draft board, but I don't want to rely on him for any production going into this year. It's definitely intriguing. Like you said, he could maybe be a closer for them if starting doesn't work out for him. But looking at the rotation too, they have McClanahan, who had his second Tommy John. Bradley's battled injuries. Pepio, I think, was hurt at some point too. Littell's okay. And then Boz has came back from injury as well. So there's definitely plenty of opportunities potentially for Boyle to step into the rotation. But do you want him to? That's the question.
Yeah. I've heard people say he could get the Rasmussen treatment, and like the way they flipped Rasmussen around could be the next Drew Rasmussen, which is pretty darn good. Like, that's good. I've also heard them say they'll rein in the speed for control, and he could be like a Pete Fairbanks. That's interesting as well. So there's a lot of ways the Rays could go with this. We know how they tinker with pitchers. We know how they limit innings and all this kind of fun stuff. I'm still very intrigued with the skill set that Joe Boyle brings to the table. Just needs someone to fine-tune it, because obviously the A's aren't the best at those kind of things. All right, last bit of news we have here is Brian De La Cruz signs with the Braves. Just wanted to bring that up. Roster Resource has him starting in the outfield, which I agree with, at least until Ronald Acuna Jr. comes back. Then it makes things interesting. But we've talked about Ramon Laureano having a good stint over there, and we've seen guys do it in the past. Even with a rough year last year, Ben, in Pittsburgh, and then early on with Miami, still at 19 home runs. So it's not the end of the world with him. So what's your thoughts on De La Cruz heading to Atlanta?
Yeah, he's guaranteed a spot until Acuna comes back. But I wouldn't completely write him off for playing time, because people have liked De La Cruz in fantasy before. And the other option is that he takes Kelnick's spot. And Kelnick hasn't really shown that he's anything special. He's 25 now. He's gotten plenty of chances, whether it's with the Mariners. I mean, the Mets didn't really give him a chance. They traded him for Diaz. But now the Braves have tried Kelnick for a while. And he had a sub-700 OPS last year, Kelnick. So I think if De La Cruz does play well while Acuna's out, maybe he sticks and Kelnick gets the boot. Maybe they platoon and then he takes over for Kelnick. So definitely in a DC as a, I don't know, like a 7-8 outfielder, I think it's appealing. But if he moves up as an outfielder 5, I probably don't know if I'd want him, because I don't, there's not that guarantee of playing time for the year, and who knows how good he'll be. But definitely some interest if he sits long enough in DCs.
Yeah, I have a couple shares, because like he just kept falling and falling and falling in drafts. His ADP is 418 right now. He's gone as low as 530 and as high as 266. So like the 266 is probably after he signed. Like that 530 was just my example. Is like there are certain drafts I'd be in, and I'm like, out of the available outfielders, like if he were to sign somewhere, he's better than most fourth or fifth outfielders that are sitting here on the draft board. So yeah, De La Cruz still intrigues me. I know it was a rough year last year, but we're only like a year removed from thinking he was a stud fantasy outfielder. So I can't give up on the guy just yet. All right, let's get to our ADP debates. NFBC draft champions first base tonight. We did catch your last episode. Tonight's ADP, we're going to use DCs, like I said, from November 15th to December 16th. There's been 13 or 14 drafts, depends on when you look at it here. Let me actually change my settings just to make sure, because I have it on the 17th of December, but I told you the 16th. So we have 14 drafts still, so it doesn't matter. We'll go down the ADP, kind of just talk about a few things. Ben has done his initial rankings. I have my initial rankings. First base for me and Ryan actually posted to the Patreon the other day. Second base will be posting anytime now as I get that together. But let me pull my rankings up. All right, Ben, let's get started then with our first debate of the evening. And I got Bryce Harper versus Freddie Freeman. Catchers, I try to do guys ranked close to each other in ADP. Harper has an ADP of around 21. Freeman has an ADP around 24. How do you see this one playing out?
Yeah, I have it the way that you have it written down, and also how ADP has it. I have Harper second, Freeman third. I don't have them in an overall position yet. I don't know if I will keep them close together or have a little bit of separation between the two. But I was in on Harper last year. He was solid. I don't think he returned all the value, because – and also one thing too, like with Harper, I think he goes at a spot where he hasn't really returned that value in a few years, like the end of the first, early second. And it's because of the playing time. So Harper finally hit 80 RBIs for the first time since 2021 last year. He had 87. He had 65 in 2022. 23 at 72. So not what you're expecting from one of your first round bats. And he did battle injury then. So now he was healthy for the first time in 2024 because he DH'd a lot in 2023. So I like Harper just because of the power upside as well. I mean, Freeman, well, I'll focus on Harper for now. But so Bryce, he has that 40 homer upside power, I think. He steals a little bit, so he's not a zero in speed. I'd rather lean a little bit homer heavy, I think, in the early rounds, if anything. That's just what my early philosophy is before I actually get down to what my actual plan is. The barrel rate did drop for Harper, only 10%. It was like 15 the year before, 12 the year before that, 18 in 2021. So it's taken a little bit of a dip. Let's see, how's the ground ball rate look like? Ground ball rate is not an issue. He had a lot of line drives last year. So I'll take the average, because he has had seasons, Harper, where he's kind of, his average has cratered. It's been a while, but if you can hit it close to 300 with 30 homers, he had 7 steals last year. I think he's pretty solid. He's younger than Freeman. So that's another thing that I like in Harper's favor. So I'll stop there for now with Harper before I talk about Freddie.
Yeah, for Harper, it's like even last year, I said he's one of my MVP choices, and obviously didn't pan out. Still played 145 games, which is great to see. That's the most he's played since 2019. As you mentioned, injuries have bugged him, but he played through an injury last year. Still hit 30 homers, but you mentioned the RBIs, first time in forever, 7 steals. Play discipline still pretty good. Hit 285. Like, it's a very, very solid season. Is it a first round, second round season? That's where it gets tough. Like, that's where it gets tricky with him, because it feels like you need to either steal more bases or drive in more runs. Like, you need to do one of the two to kind of take that bump to the people going around him. So, like, Harper's always a tough one for me, because to me, when Harper is on, still one of the best players in the game, period. Like, I have no problem. Like, if he were ever to win the MVP again, I would never be shocked. Like, he's that talented. He can go on the heaters with the best of them. He's only going to be 32. He's playing forever, as we know. He's played since he was 19 in 2012. Like, he's got – Cody Poteet's got nothing on Bryce Harper. So, he's a beast. That being said, I lean Freddie Freeman on this. So, what do you have on Freddie Freeman before I give my 2 cents on that?
Yeah, definitely down here for Freddie in 2024. I looked at the barrel rate. It wasn't really a big dip. Freddie's was 9.1%. It dropped 2 percentage points from 2023. So not a huge decline, but you definitely saw that in the power numbers. He only had 41 barrels versus 58 the year before. I mean, the average is really where it hurt. Everyone was hoping for a 300-plus average, and 282 is still good, but if you're building your team with 300 in mind from Freddie, which he had 4 years in a row, almost 8 in a row. If you take out 2019, it was 295. But so it could hurt if you're maybe taking someone like Adelis Garcia to pair with them, and then you got 2 underwhelming averages from what you're hoping for. It could hurt, but the lineup, we don't have to tell you about the lineup. It's so good where Freddie's hitting. So I don't know. He's like I mentioned, he's a little bit older than Bryce. He had the ankle issue in the playoffs.
He had surgery too.
He had surgery, so hopefully that fixes it. But, I mean, he's not going to DH for time off, so Freddie basically has to play the field all the time. And before last year, he almost had 3 full years in a row. Well, actually, it's almost like 5, because he played every game in 2020, and he almost played every game in 2019. He's been in the upper 150s for the past few years. And maybe that's taking a toll on his body. I don't know. He's played a lot of – he's been around for a long time, Freddie. The drop in the average was shown or was caught in StatCast. His XBA was 278 Freeman's, and it's been above 300 the previous 4 years. So something happened. The K rate didn't go up, though. It was only 15.7%, which is actually lower than 2023. So I'm guessing he must have more weak fly balls or something. Yeah, well, I don't know. He had a lower line drive rate.
Not a ton. Yeah.
Yeah, really the one thing that dropped was the line drive rate, only 22%, which is still very good, but he was like 27%, even had a couple of years over 30. So it could just be one blip on the radar last year. So I don't know. Freddie was always like that. Like, I remember Errol Cohen always said he was like the safest first rounder, but I don't know if the steals are going to come back, and that was part of the appeal for taking him in the first round. He's older. Like I said, he's older, so I don't know if you can maintain the 300 average, but not being very fast. So there's a lot of more. I think there's a few more question marks with Freddie than there are Harper. I mean, they both have their risk, but they're both great players still. So I get why it's close, and that's why I have this Harper slightly. I'll have him above Freddie, but I don't know about how much farther overall.
Yeah, I misspoke there a second ago. I just looked at my rankings. I have Harper second, Freddie third. I'm very fine with both. I think, to me, I think Harper's ceiling is higher. The one thing that always like kind of intrigued me with Freddie, at least we saw it for a couple of years, that he'd run. He had the 13 steals and the 23 steals. Back to 9 last year, he's got the ankle injury. Where does that go? But he is, like, if you just like consistency, you even on a down year, 22 home runs, 81 and 89. Like, Harper had the 30 home runs. So that's where he got the boost over him. They both hit close to the same batting average. Like you mentioned, Freeman's usually a 200-300 guy, which is tremendous, as we always talk about batting average kind of just dwindling in the game of baseball. So if even if Freddie can go back to hitting 300 with like 25 home runs and 10 steals, he's over Harper for me at that phase. But we don't know where that is. Like you mentioned, he's getting older. Both teams are great, so the surrounding cast is just fine in that regard. So I have Harper over Freeman. It's very, very close. Like, you're not – I'll take either argument there. I know I have a share of Freddie. I don't have a share of Harper yet because he didn't come back to me. So I gladly took Freeman, because when we talk first base, it gets bad quick. So you, if you want to wait, you can, but it gets real murky real quick. So, yeah, I'm with you. I got Harper over Freeman, but it's insanely close. Usually I don't do debates this high, but they're right next to each other. So thought it was a fun discussion point on that one. Yeah. All right, the next one will slide down the list a little more. It's a three-way debate here. Christian Walker at 103, Tristan Casas at 111, and Vinny Pascantino at 113. So, like, I wanted Walker in this debate. Like, Casas and Pascantino are kind of the same guys, almost, in a roundabout way. But I wanted Walker in here because, A, we don't know where he's playing, and, B, he's had his inconsistencies as well. So Walker versus Casas versus Pascantino, and Walker going about 10 picks before the other two. How do you see this one?
You could even have thrown Spencer Steer in there too.
Thought about it. I really did. But that batting average he has is atrocious. And I got to be our easy separating factor there.
For sure. So this one isn't really close for me in terms of rank. I have Walker as my sixth first baseman. The other guys are 9 and 11. So I alluded to the tweet I made about Stanton being comparable, at least with the underlying metrics, to the other top utility-only players like Ohtani, Ozuna, Brooker, Schwarber. Walker's the same way with Olsen, Alonso. I tweeted this out before that, and I didn't put their names in, but unless you looked it up, I don't think anyone could tell who was Olsen, who was Alonso, who was Walker. Looking at hard hit rate, XBA, X-Slug, X-Woba, barrel percentage, even ground ball, fly ball, walk, K percentages, O swing, contact. Those are the things I've been looking at. And Walker fit in with Alonso and Olsen. The thing that really hurt Walker, of course, was the oblique injury. And you mentioned we don't know where he's going to sign yet. I was loving him going to the Yankees, but now that they have Bellinger, there was talk about them not wanting to take another player who has a qualifying offer tied to them because they don't want to lose all those picks. I think Santander still has that, so I don't know. Maybe they prefer the younger Santander versus Walker, because Walker is, unfortunately, I think he's like 34, because he had a late start to his career. But he's a Gold Glove first baseman, so he's going to be appealing for all the teams. He should be, at least. And I think Walker's pretty underrated. Seeing him drop just because of the injury is something that I'll try to take advantage of, as long as wherever he signs doesn't give him an ADP boost. But I'll stop at Walker, but for me, he stands out from the other two for sure.
I want to clarify something I said earlier. I was looking at the wrong rankings. My rankings, I have Freeman 1, Harper 3. So I do take Freeman in that one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But when we're talking this one, I have Walker 5, Vinny P 8, Casas 10. So okay. I'm 100. I've been team Christian Walker for a while. I asked Ryan, he bought me a beer because of Christian Walker. I'm a big fan here. The injury is a little bit of a bummer, but three straight years of being just a monster in all homers, runs, RBIs. And, you know, he hits around 250-ish. Like, you can almost pencil that in, which not great, but if you're hitting 30-plus home runs, driving over 100 runs, I can live with a 250 batting average type guy. I think he's awesome. Hopefully he finds a really good landing spot, which makes it even better. I know the Yankees are linked to him, which would be nuts. He might go back to Arizona, which is totally fine as well. There are some very good options for Christian Walker. So you hit on a lot of the major ones there that I love about him. But yeah, just a consistent, you know, barrel rates, the hard hit rate up to 48% last year. Look at X stats. He didn't overachieve, really. Like, he's pretty much, that's who he is. just a very, very good ball player that also shows really good plate discipline for a power hitter, which you don't see every day. A 10% walk rate, which for, again, a 30-plus home run guy, not very common in baseball. So, yeah, Christian Walker, I have fifth at first base, so he'd be first for me on this list. Who would you like to talk about next?
I'll go with Casas. He's who I have next out of these three. He's tricky to rank Casas because of the injury. It sounded pretty brutal the way they described it when he was coming back and rehabbing. The one thing that hurts him for me is the strikeout rate. So in the limit, like, he was coming back from injury, Casas. So it was 31%, almost 32% his strikeout rate. So you can't really hold it against him, but I'm pretty sure that even when he came up the first year, it was not very good either. Let me pull up real quickly. Casas, he struck out at 25%. So not the worst, but it definitely went up. So, and I don't want to hold that against him. Like I said, he came back from injury. He had a, like, picking up in the middle of the season, it's got to be hard to do when everyone else is in the groove and pitchers are pretty much locked in. But I mean, his barrel rate is great. Casas, 13.3%, which is actually on par with Walker's. There is like the trade questions with Casas. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's going to happen still. Playing in Fenway kind of hurts him, but he has awesome power anyway, so that he can overcome it, at least the deep right field. And then I'll tie in Pasquantino. I had him higher. Actually, I flip-flopped Pasquantino and Bellinger. I had a Casas, Pasquantino, Bellinger, then I flipped it, so Bellinger, Pasquantino now. I could see Cody hitting more homers than Vinny P just because of the short porch and right field. It's been talked about a lot that Kansas City's Will Kauffman is very good for offense, but it hurts power. And Pasquantino only has like a 7% barrel rate last year. Even though he hits the ball very hard, it's just he doesn't get in the air that much. I mean, he has a greater fly ball rate than ground ball rate, but it's not translating into power so far. And it could just be the parks hurting him. So, I mean, he did have, I think, almost 100 RBIs, and he didn't finish the year, Pasquantino. But I think the steals from Belt, well, I'll stick to Casas. So I like Casas' power better than what Vinny P brings, which is probably the safer average and maybe more a little more well-rounded stat line. But Casas could hit 40 homers probably. So I that's what separates the two for me.
Yep, Uncle Ted agrees. He thinks Casas hits 40-plus bombs. The thing that separates it from me, because I think they're both very good, they're almost a Spider-Man meme for me. Like, they're very similar players. Vinny P, I trust his batting average much more than Tristan Casas. So that's kind of a bump there. Casas has more power than Vinny P. That's Captain Obvious. So I'm with you there. I'm just really concerned with the trade rumors for Casas. Like, why would you trade this guy? And they're really actively shopping him. And so I'm kind of thinking, is there something we don't know about Tristan Casas that we should know about? I know he's kind of a weird dude. He's out there doing his stuff pregame and stuff. Like, do what you got to do. I don't care what he does. But there seems like there's something kind of that the Red Sox don't like about him. Or maybe they just don't want to pay him, so they're going to get something back. I don't know. But, like, if he were to get traded to Seattle, that would suck.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm preemptively ranking him down. It was tough for me to rank him. Like you said, initially, it was tough to rank these guys. It was very tough for me to – because, like, Casas, he could be a top five guy, and I wouldn't be shocked. Like, I really wouldn't be. He could also be a 15th overall if he goes to the wrong team. And it's just a really tough situation with him. So I have him 10th. I think he's going to be very, very good. I think Vinny P, I just love that batting average. I still think there's more power there. You know, if you believe in projections, they're both projected. One's projected at 26 homers. One's projected at 28. But one's going to hit 0.35 points better than the other, and that's like a big boost. They have the same stat line except batting average. Again, if you believe in projections, like, when you get your projection stat rankings coming out, it'll be really interesting to see where that lines up for you. But so I got Vinny at 8, Casas at 10. I have Walker winning this thing pretty easily. All right, the next one we have here, I mentioned we got this name coming up later, Cody Bellinger versus Jake Berger. Two players in two new towns, so this is fun. This might not even be an option for a debate next time around. Bellinger ADP of 122. He's gone as high as 97. You got Jake Berger at 126, as high as 116. Bellinger in the Bronx, Berger with Texas. How do you have this one playing out? Because I will say I have not updated my rankings since Bellinger got traded, so I might have to adjust a bit.
Yeah, well, I mentioned I flip-flopped Cody and Pasquantino, but even before that, I had Berger as my first base 8. I was pretty high on Jake Berger.
I thought I was high. You beat me. That's good.
So maybe this is the Jonah Heim of this episode.
I respect it, though, so we're good.
Yeah, I mean, Berger, really the only thing that's worse with the other guys like that we just mentioned is the O swing for Berger. It was 41.3%, which is pretty poor. But I said on plenty of shows before that hitters can overcome a bad O swing if they hit the ball well enough in the zone, I think. And Berger mashes. I don't view him as a batting average risk that much because of how hard he hits the ball. He's at 250. I think I mentioned on a recent show for something else, like 3 years in a row. So he's got the Chris Davis going, but even better than Chris Davis. And Berger also has, well, now Cody does too, but they're both multi-eligible. So that's what pushes Berger ahead of the like Casas and Pascotino for me. And then I think I even had him here before the trade. And that's because Berger has hit that power potential the last 2 years. And even now in Texas, I like the lineup surrounding him a lot more than I did in Miami. And I'll talk about, we talk about Cody, so I'll mention him here too. But like, of course, Cody got the big boost, but his underlying metrics are still pretty poor. His Bellinger's average X velocity was less than 88 miles per hour. Only his barrel rate was half of Berger's. His hard hit was only 32.4%. His XBA was 245. So with Cody, you're banking on some steals because he's still very fast, and it could be out of position steals if he is used as a first baseman on your team. I mean, he has the flexibility. So if you have I had Cody Bellinger on a main event last year, and I played him all over the place. My first base spot, CI, outfield, you name it, he was there. So it's definitely valuable for that. But Berger has first and third, not as good as first outfield, but it's still valuable. And I think Berger's power is legit, and Cody will have good volume as well, but he needs the volume to be valuable. And I think, and look what Berger did in the second half. He hit like 20 homers or something, and he could have had 40 potentially if he didn't get hurt in the first half, which is always a risk. He's a big guy and he swings hard, so he could pull an oblique every year, potentially, hopefully not. But in terms of potential, now that Berger's on the Rangers, I'll definitely take him over Cody still.
Yeah, I have Berger at 11. I had Cody at 14. Might have to change that just a bit, but Cody still scares me for the reasons you made. Like, the ballpark's awesome. There's no denying that. That's freaking perfect for him. You're going to hear that 1,000 times before things are all said and done. But what you hit on is, and it's what I've preached even last year talking about Cody after he came off that 26-20 season. If he's not running, which he only had 9 last year, his underlying metrics are so sketchy. Like, it's just really, like, 266, 18 homers. All things considered, not bad, but what you're paying for, that's not it. That's not going to get you what you want. You mentioned the barrel rates, the hard hits. It's not a power hitter's profile by any means. I think I saw someone tweet out, can you tell me which one's Cody Bellinger's and which one's Alex Verdugo's? They are identical almost. The StatCast little things, with the rolling, the blues and the reds. That says a lot. It says a lot if people really want to think about it. So I think Bellinger's better than Verdugo. I think it's pretty easy to say, but at the same time, there are questions with Belly. Berger's a beast. I've been team Berger for a couple years now. I think Berger could be a Pete Alonso clone. Like, Alonso's got 50 home run power. I don't know if Berger can get to 50, but an average year from Pete Alonso, Berger can get to that easy. So I think there's if you like Alonso, it's just like, well, just move Berger up like a round or two and take Berger instead, is my 2 cents. And don't chase Alonso. I love the power. I love he's actually, like you said, 250 average. That's really good for a dude of his like skill set. You don't expect that either. So yeah, I'm team Berger for sure on this one. And the fact you had him, what did you say? You had him 8, 9, 8, I think.
Yeah. And I'm looking, yeah, I have him at 8, and I'm looking at my sheet. So I mentioned the tweet about Olsen, Alonso, and Walker. Mm-hmm. If I included Berger, the only thing that would stick out is the O swing and the contact rate, because everything, all the power numbers and the expected stats are as good, or if not better than those other three guys, and they're going much earlier than Berger. So,
yep, a big Jake Berger fan, not to mention all the eligibility, like you said, and that's what makes Bellinger attractive. There's no denying that.
Yes,
that corner outfield is tremendous, especially in DCs, let alone Fab Leagues late in the season. But yeah, both good situations, good teams. So, I got Berger over him, but if Belly could ever tap into it, he's in the perfect place to do it. And that's all I got to say. So, if he wants to prove me wrong, he's at the best place to possibly do it. All right. Three more to do here, and we're going to get to Nick in the chat earlier in the show. He mentioned Yandy Diaz. Well, I told you we got him coming up. We got Paul Goldschmidt, ADP of 204. Yandy Diaz, 212. It's going pretty close to each other. Goldie, still looking for a home, coming off a rough season. We kind of started to turn it around in the second half. Still a little rough. You have Yandy Diaz, who was a power hitter early. That disappeared, but still average is pretty solid. So, Goldie versus Yandy. What do you like in here, Ben?
Yes, it's not really that close again either for me. I have Goldschmidt at my first base 12, which I was kind of surprised at when I put my rankings together.
How bad the position is.
Yeah, it's after Vinny P, and well, for me at least, it gets ugly. I do like Toglia though; he has some pretty appealing upside. But yeah, with Yandy, so I have Yandy at 17, Goldschmidt at 12, in my first base rankings. We saw the downside of Yandy last year. I don't think he eclipsed 70 runs or RBIs for the Rays, and like they lost Randy. They have the schedule fiasco. The barrels and the flyball revolution of Yandy didn't stick around. He still destroys worms. 54.7% ground ball rate last year, only 28% flyball rate. He still hits the ball as hard as anyone, and it makes great contact. Overall, 87.6% for Yandy, so he doesn't strike out. He's a good XBA, 280. The barrel rate isn't awful. It's 7.6, but that's saying when he hits it in the air, it's definitely going at a pretty decent angle and speed, but there's too many ground balls still, so the power won't be there. He's pretty old now, too. Yandy's like 34, 33. Not as old as Goldschmidt, but with Goldschmidt, he had a 10% barrel rate still last year, a 48% hard hit rate. His XBA was 258, which was better than Olsen, Alonso, even Christian Walker. It was one above Josh Naylor, who was 257. So even though Goldschmidt's average tanked, I think he got unlucky. His exit velocity was still 91.2%. And I never thought I'd be a Goldschmidt like supporter, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. But looking at the stats, I think he got a little unlucky. And it's going to matter where he goes. But like you said, first base gets kind of – there's a lot of question marks after those first 10 or 11 or so players. And I just think because Goldschmidt didn't completely collapse last year. Like, yeah, the K rate's been going up for a while. It was 26.5% for him. But I still think he could be productive in the right spot. And if he signs somewhere bad, maybe I'll have to adjust. But even so, I don't think he's going to drop enough where he catches Yandy. I'd much rather take Goldschmidt.
Yep, we're in the same boat here. I have Goldie at 13, Yandy at 16. I actually have a few Goldies already. Like if I miss out on first base where I want to attack it, back it up or corner infield real quick, I've liked Goldie, like you said, still 22 and 11, hitting 245 on what felt like a massively down season. He's getting older. There's no denying that. He has trouble with the fastball at times. There's no denying that either. That probably happens as you get older. But you hit on a lot of it. Like the barrel rate was still pretty good. The hard hit rate was still pretty good. X stats say he got unlucky. Like there's just a bunch of things that point to Goldie should have been a bit better. Like if you dig even deeper, I mentioned the first half, second half. Dude hit 271 in the second half with 9 homers compared to 230 with 13 homers in 30 fewer games. Like he really started to get – he almost had the same amount of RBIs in the second half of the year in 30 fewer games. We saw a different Goldie. It felt like at least in the contact and power department, the consistency department in the second half of the year. So I'm on board with it going at that ADP that we discussed of almost 200 for crying out loud. He's ADP, he's 205, 204. So I'll take a Goldie at that point for sure. If you've missed out on a bunch of guys, I'm a fan of that. Yandy, I've just never been in on because I never believed in the power. Like we got 14 homers this past year, 22 the year before, hit 281, which still good, but he's not getting you steals. He's barely getting your runs and RBIs and leading off in Tampa. Like it's just a dead profile to me that he'd have to be going like first base 20 to 25 to have like viability to me with a stat line like that. And like he's a good real life player. There's zero denying that. For fantasy, he just doesn't have the juice at all for me. And if he wants to prove me wrong, it's fine. But I've proven him wrong for like 3 or 4 straight years. So I still win in that category. All right, 2 more to go here. This is we're getting a little deeper in the weeds here, but Nathaniel Lowe, ADP of 238, Michael Bush, ADP of 251. They're spread out a bit, but like I found like in drafts, I feel like these two are people that kind of go back to back real quick together. It feels like there is a round gap between the two. But what are your thoughts on Nathaniel Lowe and Michael Bush? And Bush might get a bump now with Cody out of town.
Yes, he could. I'm surprised that Lowe's going so high. He didn't really do much, I don't think, to deserve a boost in ADP because I know he didn't go this high. Well, maybe I've been down on Lowe for a while now. Mm-hmm. It's because of the ground ball rate, but I'm definitely team Bush here. I have him at 16, so I actually have him ahead of Yandy, and then I have Lowe at 21. And after I looked at the list that you sent, I was struggling with low because I had him, I think I had him even lower, and I moved him up to 21. And I think I was being kind of harsh on him, and I'll kind of get into that a little bit. But with Bush, yeah, so he's projected to be now the four hitter for the Cubs now that Bellinger's gone. I think first base is safe for him now. And one of the things that stood out for me with why I kind of am optimistic with him is that he had 11% barrel rate last year. Yeah, the K rate was bad, 28.6%. XBA was only 221. But he still had a very solid year. He almost had 250. People can outperform their expected stats, or they can also underperform as well. But anything in that 250 range or 240 with at this point in the draft with good power would be fine. I think he had 25 homers last year, Bush, if I'm not mistaken. And the one thing, though, is I think – or he had 21, but he scored 73 runs, 65 RBIs. It's not going to help you in steals, Bush, but that's all right. You don't really want that at that point, or not, you're not really expecting it. The one thing, though, is that baseball roster resource has Bush as the – in a platoon. Or, no, they have him full-time. But then I looked up his playing time last year, and I think he is more of a platoon player, Bush. He had a good portion of his – plate appearances versus righties. It was over the 80% threshold that I've kind of established for myself. So that's kind of something to keep in mind. But yeah, so I'm definitely ahead of the market, it feels like, on Bush, but I'll wait and see what projections say before I make any adjustments. So I'll stop there for now.
Yeah, I have Bush 18, Loden 20. I will move Bush up after this trade. I should have had him up already. Like, there's no reason I'm with you. He should be ahead of Yandy and a couple. My initial look at my rankings, I might have him at 13 or 14 when things are all said and done. Just that's why I love doing these early discussions, kind of getting the brain working even more, kind of move things around. But something that got dropped in the Discord by Michael Cicchini, he said, Cubs president of baseball operations, Jed Hoyer, indicated Tuesday, the day of the show, the day of the trade, that Bush is not under consideration to play third base and will instead remain focused on first base. The Cubs have an opening at the hot corner following the trade of Paredes. And Bush has some experience at third base, where the team views Bush as potential gold glove caliber first baseman, which means he should play every day, and wants him to remain there. Top prospect Matt Shaw looks to be the favorite at third base. Yeah, there was some talk. He had a 103 WRC plus versus lefties last year, so it's not like he was dead versus lefties. I think there's room to give him a chance. I love him hitting cleanup in that lineup. I think he's legit power. I mentioned it during that conversation in the Discord that I have a decent amount of Michael Bush in drafts as my backup first baseman, corner infielder. You know, you want to go three to four deep at most positions. I think Bush is a really solid one that could take the next step. Obviously, if he plays every day, if he hits cleanup, it is still a very good lineup. We mentioned when we talked about the trade earlier, still outfield's loaded, still have Swanson. You got options there in Chicago. So the team should be very, very good still. Bush has crazy power. We saw it in the minors, and I don't know if he's fully tapped into it yet at the big league level. So that's something to keep in mind as well. So yeah, I'm a big fan of him at that level. Nathaniel Lowe, better real life player than fantasy. Like, if you just want consistent 15 to 20 homers, you know, 60 to 70 runs in RBIs, that's good. Doesn't run much, 260 average. Okay, that's a good corner infield in the 15. You take that, like, probably and move away with it. But there are obviously, I don't think there's a ceiling where Bush has a ceiling. Michael Bush has a ceiling. That we could see. So yes, I'll take Bush over Lowe. A lot of the things you mentioned as well.
Yeah, on Lowe real quick. So the one thing that I'm struggling with is that he's pretty identical to Jake Cronenworth, and I have Cronenworth at 18. But I think the difference with me is that, yeah, this is like pre everything. This is looking at situation, underlying metrics. Cronenworth has the dual eligibility.
That helps a lot.
He hits more in the heart of the lineup for the Padres. Roster resource has Lowe as the fifth hitter. And I think I said this when Berger was traded. I think Berger hits fifth instead. So I think Lowe gets pushed down even farther. And Lowe's barrel rate is only 5.8%.
You have Lowe compared to Cronenworth, not Bush.
I have Bush 16, Cronenworth 18, Lowe 21.
My bad.
I have Cronenworth in the middle. But in terms of like what they produce, Cronenworth is very comparable to Lowe, but so that's why I have that big. I wasn't as clear. I have a bigger gap between Bush and Lowe, but I think like the barrel rate and the ground ball rate are so poor for Lowe, but he has like in a full year produced pretty decent run totals. I think it's almost 90 2 years ago, Lowe, and average doesn't hurt. So I really want to see what the projections say before, because this range of first base is pretty tough to distinguish between. I mean, there's other guys we haven't mentioned and we won't mention, but like it's all kind of one big mess of similar profiles, and it's tricky.
Yeah, that's why I could see from basically my 15th down, like my second half already 30, I could mix a lot of these guys up still. Just the more we talk about it and the points you make and just talking it out, like, yeah, I could see me jumping this. Like, I have no respect for Cronenworth in my rankings. I maybe should look at that more. I have him 26th. Maybe I should have him much higher type thing. Like, at least gives me something to think about hearing you say that, because I don't disagree with what you're saying, but a lot of similarities. Like, to me, when I compare Nathaniel Lowe, I'm like, he's Nolan Schenwell to me. Like, they're very similar. Lowe might have a little bit more power. I think Schenwell still has more to tap into, but again, another conversation for another day. You like Toglia. I have him right in front of Lowe, right behind Bush. Like, I think there's interesting discussions for all those guys, like you said.
I have Toglia 13.
It's one of those, if he could hit for average, he's worth 13, though. That's the thing, is like, can he hit for average? Because the power is insane. There's zero denying the power. Like, and a full season playing first base could be awesome. There's zero denying that. I just get so terrified of that batting average, because I rostered him for like the second half of the season. We talked about it on this show, on the fab process, because he's always getting picked up and down for stuff. I just never dropped him after a while. I just kept him. Like, either benched or played every week. And that was just the reality of the situation, because the skill set was awesome. Consistency was troublesome, but he's young. So, like, that's the kind of guys that might be worth taking a chance on.
If he's not in course, he's lower for me. I'll say that.
He's probably not even in my conversation. maybe it's different ballparks, but yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
All right, last one we have here, and this is like, people might go, why are you talking about them? It's like, first off, they're top 300 drafted, so you're taking them at least even in 12s. Heck, you're almost taking them in 10s. But because to me, especially deeper in these DCs and stuff, they're interesting. We got Reese Hoskins, ADP of 289, undrafted or unsigned right now, so looking for a home. And then you have Andrew Vaughn at 294, so they're going like 5 picks apart. Vaughn's been like a really steady Eddie, honestly. Like, to me, why take Nathaniel Lowe if you can take Andrew Vaughn type conversation, personally? Very similar skill sets and stat lines. But then you got Hoskins, who, even when his batting average sucked, the power is still ridiculous. Like, he's a Toglia, basically. How do you see this Hoskins versus Vaughn situation?
Well, you compared Lowe to them, and if you throw away Luis Arraez because he's so weird, I have Lowe, Vaughn, and Hoskins back-to-back-to-back in my first base rankings. I have Arraez in there, too, just because I needed to put him somewhere. I don't want to draft him anywhere. But I have Vaughn ahead of Hoskins by, I guess, 2 spots, technically. And with Vaughn, it's just – I like him. I had him a couple spots last year. It's just that the White Sox are so bad. Vaughn has pretty good barrel rate. It's a 9.3% last year. XBA is only 245, but the X slug was solid. The hard hits – fine, 43%. His exit velocity was 90 miles per hour. He hits kind of fly ball heavy, which is what you want to do in the White Sox Park, whatever it's called now. And then the thing with Hoskins, so I kind of misspoke in the Patreon Discord about where I had him ranked. I remember, so I said that I had him a lot higher when I wrote it down, but then when I actually have Hoskins, because of, if you look at the profile, it's not as bad as it seems. So he had almost a 30% K rate last year, Hoskins. But I remember looking at like at his swinging strike rate, and it was only, I believe, 10%. And the problem is that he just didn't swing. He kind of had a little case of the Vogelbox, where he was, I think his CSW was, and I forget who mentioned this, but it was an interesting conversation. So his CSW against him, Hoskins, was 29.9%, and his called strike percentage was 20%. So 2/3 of that was just from him taking pitches. And if you think about it, Hoskins came back from a year away. So I think he was just being too patient, and he may not be, quote unquote, in the swing of things. But like, the power was still pretty good for him. He had a 12% barrel rate, which is pretty good. I mean, the XBA was 206, but that's because of the average, and he hit so many fly balls. So I'm not going to completely write off Hoskins. I think if he can see the ball better this year, I mean, he is older though, so maybe he's just kind of losing that ability. Who knows? But seeing such a low swing strike rate for Hoskins gave me some optimism if I get to a point in a draft where I'm a little light on first base and he's still there, and I could probably take he's never had a good average, but it's never been XBA 206 bad. So if he can just swing the bat a little bit more, I think he could be fine. And like with Vaughn, he's going to hit in the middle of the god awful White Sox lineup, but he should give him some decent runs in RBIs. Maybe he gets traded to a better team because they probably want to move him before he loses any value. But it's they're definitely boring and more so valuable in DCs and 15 teamers.
Yes, much more deep league type guys, but just interesting to me in the fact like Hoskins, even with the kind of injury riddled season, like you mentioned, first year back, 26 home runs. 214, like what I loved about him, like you mentioned, there's basically his 245. He's penciling them in and going, hitting you 25 to 30 home runs. It was pretty awesome. So if he can get anywhere near like 230 to 240, I think he's still very, very viable as a corner infielder, especially in deeper formats. The strikeout rate going up is not ideal. But again, things you mentioned about, you know, just coming back and all those kind of things, tough to disagree with because I still think he's very good. Like he's 31. He's younger than the Goldies of the world and stuff. I'm wondering if the Giants would be interested in him just because he's from like the Sacramento area. That'd be kind of a fun little bring Hoskins home for cheap, see what he can do, trade him if it works out or whatever. Cause I'd love to see Walker there, but he'd cost too much probably for the Giants. So Hoskins is interesting. And I don't want Lamont Wade playing every day at first base. Andrew Vaughn, he went to Berkeley if you want to really get creative in Giants things. But I love Vaughn. I think he's a better batting average guy than this. I know it's back to back years, 258, 246. He came out of college. I know it's much different than the bigs, and he basically got thrown right into the bigs from college. Like, I'm waiting for him to – he was such a contact batting average guy with his power in college. That's why he's a top pick in drafts. I actually got to watch him in college, and the dude was just – they were walking. They gave him the Barry Bonds treatment. It was crazy. I'm waiting for him to find that. I don't know if he ever will. Maybe he just needs a new environment to make him feel more comfortable, but another guy you can pencil in, 15 to 20 homers, 250-ish average – solid stuff, but like the ceiling that Hoskins brings, even off of a kind of rough year, I think it's still way better than Vaughn. Vaughn's just he I don't know if he's ever going to find it, is what I'm saying. And that's the bad part being in Chicago and the surrounding cast. I think Hoskins might sign with the White Sox for all we know, but that would really hurt this discussion. But I'll take Hoskins over Vaughn. I think there's just a higher ceiling there to enjoy. When I look at rankings, I actually have Vaughn ahead of Hoskins. But again, like I said, talking things out on this show helps a lot. They're right next to each other, so it's literally like grasping at straws at that point in the draft. But I think I would lean Hoskins off it. Actually, late power in drafts is, they say, easy to find, but it's not. I've noticed in these drafts. So the ability to find a potential 30 home run bat late, I'd be a fan of taking a shot at and seeing where it goes. So give me Hoskins. All right. That'll wrap us up, Ben. That was a fun deal there. We got a listener question to get to before we head out of here, but another fun set of debates, I believe. And for those that are still in tune with us, we'll get to second base on the next episode as we keep going through our rankings there. We have a question from buddy Dave Petriello over on the Twitter there. Is ignoring first base till after pick 250? So he's talking OCs, but I got DC up. 250 would basically Michael Busch below. Is that strategy in OCs and mains viable? I did it in my first Gladiator, and I'm considering it in bigger drafts, although I hope to get at least one share of Vlad. I'll get your thoughts first. I've been drafting, so I want to get your thoughts for someone that hasn't drafted yet. How would you feel about this?
I think looking at the ADP list, at least, because that's what Dave was going off of, mm-hmm. I'd rather not wait to draft my first baseman at this point. But if I had to, I'd want either Bush or, based on my rankings, maybe Mountcastle.
That's who, yeah.
We didn't mention him, but I have him right behind Cronenworth, who actually goes not far after these guys. It actually goes Bush, Mountcastle, Cronenworth, and ADP. But there's a two-round gap between Bush and Cronenworth. Yeah, I would. So I kind of fell into this trap last year in drafts. I had a lot of Vaughn. I had Ty France. I had Anthony Rizzo across several teams because I like that mid 200s first base, like where they're kind of quote unquote boring and could give you decent power and run production. Didn't really work out for all those guys for various reasons. So I'm not saying it's going to be a repeat of that this year, but these guys I think have a little more upside than those names I just mentioned. So if you had to wait, I don't think it would be as bad as what happened last year with the names I mentioned. And even Hoskins he used to be a mid 100s pick before he got hurt. And he's going after those three guys I just mentioned. So it's definitely doable. It's just, I wouldn't plan my draft around doing that if I could help it.
Yes. The first part you said there, I 100% agree with. It's definitely doable. And then I also agree with the next part. I wouldn't prefer to do it is what I come down to. I mentioned earlier, I have a lot of Bush shares. I prefer to make him like my second first baseman in a DC. But what I will come back to is he's talking fab leagues. And you can fab first basemans. Like I mentioned Toglia earlier in the show. You could take Lamont Wade on a week. They face a bunch of righties. Those are just two examples. There'll be many more. There'll be guys not drafted like Pavin Smith keeps getting brought up. I love Pavin Smith. If Walker doesn't go back to Arizona, that probably his ADP will come up in hindsight, but I think there's a ton to like there. There will be plenty of first base options. If like Davison De Los Santos, if he actually gets to play regularly in Miami, like there'll be guys, but there'll be lots of warts on those guys. And that happens in any deep league, no matter where you, what position you're talking about. But would you rather it be like your fourth or fifth outfielder or your starting first baseman? That's the questions I think you have to start coming up with, because we've talked about it on the Fab shows. Outfielders are a lot easier to, you know, roll through in Fab, where first base maybe not so much. That would be my two cents there. I'm trying to get an early first baseman if I can, even if it's one of my top like 10, just to have somebody I can kind of quote unquote trust. But if I have to go Bush Mountcastle, I don't hate it. I think Mountcastle's in for a big season. I don't think he's going to platoon that much. Hopefully not. So there are windows. Let's put it that way. I just, like you said, I'd rather not. It's very doable, much more doable in a 12 than a 15, obviously, much more doable. I'd just rather not do it.
Okay, these guys are great corner infielders, like you were saying. Mountcastle, I mean, even utility, but I mean, at that point, I don't know if you're going to get that many corners at this point in the draft, but you never know.
Yeah, so you can definitely do it. Just plan accordingly and maybe get extra aggressive if it gets to that point of the draft. Don't think you're going to get them and then get watch both of them disappear. And now you're stuck with Andrew Vaughn or something like that. Like, I had a lot of Heimer Candelario last year. Not a great feeling, but you have to move and shake with that for sure.
I will add, though, so if Dave does do this, I don't want to bring up the past, but as an example, double tap, because when I did really well in the main event in 2022, I took Christian Walker as a backup, or Rowdy Tellez as a backup to the guy in the Red Sox who flamed out.
Dahlbeck?
Yeah. I took Dahlbeck as my first base, and I backed him up right away with Walker or Rowdy, and it paid off. So I think you hear that a lot, though. Like, if you take, say, Bobby Witt in the first round, wait for your next shortstop, because there's no point unless it's like an obvious middle infielder pick. But the later you take a position, the sooner you want to back it up. So just be ready to almost double tap.
Makes a ton of sense on that. So before we head out here, Ben, any other final thoughts? That was a great one right there on the double tap. Anything else as we move on from first base, we'll move to second. We'll obviously come back to first base in a month or so as we get more projections and stuff coming out. But anything else before we head on out tonight?
It was definitely tricky to rank. I think I had more difficulties sorting through from the tier after Bellinger and Pasquantino, all those guys up until like Hoskins. I think that whole group is just tough to sort. But I was looking at the ADP, and I feel like all those guys are kind of in the big jumbled mess with how I have them versus ADP. I don't actually have the rankings, but or like the actual positions down. But yeah, so you can't really go wrong, I don't think. Like Strand's in there, we didn't mention him. He could be he could go up with where Pasquantino. Well, Encarnacion, I should say, he could be there with Vinny P eventually if he pans out. Even Soderstrom was interesting. He had a great barrel rate, but I don't know. He didn't really do it in a lot of playing time. So a lot of interesting names at first base. And like I said before, I really want to see what the projections say, and hopefully that can help me make some moves or solidify my opinions on certain guys.
Yep. We'll have some more fun, obviously, debating other positions and coming back and rehashing rankings as we adjust things and kind of get a feel as things go on. It's only December 17th, folks. Long ways to go on this one. So we'll keep it coming for you here, and make sure y'all follow Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I'm at BDentric. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 706. Catch y'all next time.